Top stories, two major U.S. bases in Iraq come under rocket and drone attacks amid growing anti-American sentiments across the country. More than 500,000 people signed a petition for former British Prime Minister Tony Blair to be stripped of knighthood. We'll have a report from London. Also ahead, the UK, France and Italy record new highs in daily COVID cases a day after the US set a global record with over 1 million infections. Reports from Iraq say four rockets have hit the U.S.'s Camp Victory base near Baghdad's international airport. The attack comes following two consecutive days of strikes against U.S. bases in the country. Hours earlier, U.S.-led forces claimed to have downed two armed drones targeting the Ain al-Assad airbase in Iraq's Anbar province. A similar drone attack was launched Monday on the Victory Base complex. Meanwhile, the U.S.-led military coalition says it's carried out airstrikes in Syria's Deir ez-Zor province against what it calls an imminent threat. The attacks come amid growing anti-U.S. sentiments over Washington's military and political adventurism in the region. A senior commander of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps says the perpetrators who assassinated Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani will not be safe. Commander of the IRGC Quds Force, Brigadier General Ismail Qahani, says Tehran will never forget the martyrdom of Soleimani and his comrades. Qahani noted that Iran knows those behind the murder of the top Iranian commander, including former U.S. President Donald Trump and his Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, and will retaliate in its own way. He said Tehran aspired for the withdrawal of U.S. troops from the region, but achieved more than that when Iraq expelled American forces in effect. The IRGC commander highlighted the soaring anti-Washington sentiment in Iraq and the growing calls for the expulsion of the 2,000 U.S. forces remaining there. Iran's capital, Tehran, has hosted pundits and officials from across the world to discuss the dimensions of the U.S. assassination of Iranian military commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, who was targeted in 2020 in an American drone strike in Iraq. Youssef Jaloli has a report.
Political experts and academics from 20 countries are here to discuss the character of a man who is known as the nemesis of the terrorists, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. General Soleimani was the commander of the Quds Force of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps. He was assassinated in January 2020 in a U.S. drone strike outside Baghdad International Airport on a direct order from then-U.S. President Donald Trump.
When we talk about Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, we're talking about a military commander who tasked himself with helping humanity, no matter if they were Christian, Azeris, or Sunni Muslims. That's what made him a revered figure who is loved by the people in the region, and millions took part in his funeral to pay homage to him.
So Qasem Soleimani is a human without a border. He's not an Iranian. He is for everybody because he helped Iranians, Syrians, Palestine, and so on and so forth. So when we talk of a hero, Qasem Soleimani is a real hero.
Soleimani is well known for dislodging Daesh terrorists in Iraq in 2017. He also spearheaded major operations in Syria that resulted in liberating key areas from Daesh. Observers say, by assassinating General Soleimani, the U.S. tried to resurrect the terrorists. However, they call it a miscalculation that backfired in Washington, triggering the beginning of its exit from the region.
The previous administration of President Trump has explicitly announced their responsibility for this crime. President Trump, he said that, I ordered to kill General Soleimani. Now, this hegemonic attitude has to be stopped. They have to leave us. They are the direct reason, the Zionist American access, the direct reason for the destability and lack of security in the region and internationally. They have to be pushed out.
The Islamic Republic now calls General Soleimani a martyr and hails him as a national hero. It says it is working closely with Iraq to prosecute those behind Soleimani's assassination and will not stop until all perpetrators, including Donald Trump, face justice.
These people say the world owes General Soleimani a big thank you for his role in eradicating Daesh, since the terror group was trying to extend its activities throughout the world. They say the United States made a big mistake by assassinating General Soleimani, since it led everyone to a safe interpretation that Washington must be on the terrorist team. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
A ceremony is being held in the Lebanese capital to mark the second anniversary of the U.S. assassination of General Soleimani and senior Iraqi commander Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis. Resistance factions participating in the event said the U.S. assassinated Soleimani because he was a barrier to American-Israeli plots in the region. Mariam Saleh reports.
Representatives of resistance groups gathered in Beirut to pay tribute to Iran's top commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, and senior Iraqi commander Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis. The two anti-terror icons were assassinated in an American drone strike outside Baghdad airport on January 3, 2020. Participants in the event all agreed that Soleimani united the region in the face of a common threat posed by the U.S. and Israel.
Their martyrdom did not weaken the resistance. On the contrary, it led to more accomplishments and success for the resistance. They are alive. This type of life is what gives a strength to the resistance. Martyr Qasem transcended his country to become the martyr of the entire nation, and this is an exceptional characteristic.
Hezbollah Deputy Secretary General Sheikh Naim Qasem stressed that people in the region will stand united and confront the threat posed by the United States. Meanwhile, the Secretary General of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad Movement, Ziad Nakhala, described Soleimani as the martyr of Palestine and Al-Quds.
The U.S. assassinated Soleimani because he was a barrier to American-Israeli plots in the region. He transformed the resistance fighters into a strategic threat to Israel and the U.S. I take this opportunity to say that we're proud of the positions of the Islamic Republic of Iran, which is unwavering in its support for the Palestinian resistance, and I witness that Qasem Soleimani was at the forefront of the fight in defense of Palestine and the people of Palestine.
The Iranian ambassador to Beirut also said that there is a joint Iranian-Iraqi judicial lawsuit being followed up by both countries to try the killers of the Iranian and Iraqi martyrs who were assassinated by the United States.
Resistance groups in the region consider General Qasem Soleimani as a man and a leader who united them. People in Lebanon, even those who knew him only after his martyrdom, see him as a man who transcended borders and sacrificed his life for the sake of the people and regional peace and stability. Mariam Saleh, Beirut.
More than 500,000 people have signed a petition for former British Prime Minister Tony Blair to be stripped of knighthood, an appointment personally made by the country's monarch just last week. The petitioners say the former premier should be tried and jailed for his role in the illegal invasion of Iraq in 2003. Saeed Pourreza is in London.
Britain's highest rank for chivalry, awarded by Queen Elizabeth to former Prime Minister Tony Blair, a man described by campaigners as one of the most repugnant political figures in the world, in power from 1997 to 2007.
The backlash to the announcement has been immense and is only growing. Furious Iraq War veterans are now calling for the honor system to be overhauled. And more than 500,000 people have signed a petition calling on the Queen to strip the man they call a war criminal of his new title.
It's a designation routinely awarded to former prime ministers here, but anti-war campaigners say they're repulsed at seeing Blair receiving it. And they have their reasons.
For millions of people in this country, it's an absolute insult, as it is to the people of Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, and various other places where we've now seen the war on terror over the last 20 years. And I don't see any justification for it whatsoever. I think that Blair never conceded that he was wrong about any of these things. The Chilcot inquiry, which was very, very critical of him, he immediately held a very long press conference afterwards and said he would do exactly the same again.
In mid-February 2003, just before the Iraq invasion, tens of millions of demonstrators in hundreds of cities across the world, including in London, marched against the impending U.S.-led war in the Middle East. to Tony Blair, the biggest protest march in British history, was fatuous. The U.S. claimed the regime of former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein possessed weapons of mass destruction and actively pressed for invading Iraq in late 2001. The weapons were never found. 2 decades on, 1 million Iraqis dead, 3 million dispossessed, and a region reeling from terrorism and instability. Hundreds of British troops were also killed in the same conflict. Anti-war campaigners say Tony Blair belongs in the dock at The Hague, and not in the pantheon of great leaders. Saeed Purazep, London.
COVID-19 infections are soaring to record numbers in Europe as the highly contagious Omicron variant rages on. The UK has registered a daily record of nearly 219,000 new infections and 48 further deaths. The spike in cases has caused a shortage of health workers, with multiple hospitals declaring a critical situation. France has also set a new daily high in COVID infections, logging more than 270,000 new cases. The French government has already introduced new restrictions to contain the surge. Italy is another country hit hard by the latest wave of the pandemic. It has confirmed a record daily tally of over 170,000 cases, with nearly 260 more deaths. Italy has reported more than 6.4 million overall infections. Now, here's a global of record daily COVID infections since the pandemic began, and that's happening in the United States with more than 1 million cases in a single day. According to Johns Hopkins University, nearly 1,700 people also lost their lives on Monday. The nation's top pandemic advisor, Anthony Fauci, has warned that the U.S. is experiencing an almost vertical increase in cases. The new surge is triggered by the highly transmissible Omicron variant. So far, only 62% of Americans have been fully vaccinated. The hospitals are overwhelmed, and the healthcare system is already strained by the Delta variant. The U.S. is the hardest hit country in the world. It has already lost 850,000 people to the disease. Palestinian prisoner in an Israeli jail, Hisham Abu Hawash, has agreed to end his months-long hunger strike after reaching an agreement with the Israeli regime. A lawyer for Abu Hawash says the regime has suspended his administrative detention, but it will not release him immediately. According to his attorney, Abu Hawash will be hospitalized for medical follow-up before his release on February the 26th. Families and friends of the inmate gathered outside his house in Al-Khalil to celebrate the news. Abu Hawash, who was arrested in October 2020, went on a hunger strike more than 140 days ago in protest at his detention without charge or trial. The Palestinian Islamic Jihad movement has warned Israel over his deteriorating health and threatened revenge if he died in custody. To discuss the legal issues surrounding Israel's so-called administrative detention, we contacted journalist and activist Robert Fantino. Take a listen to what he had to say.
There is no legality to it. It is simply a way for the Israeli government to arrest, harass, and detain innocent Palestinians. This is a policy that can be renewed indefinitely. Hisham Abu Hawash is... administrative detention is being suspended, and he's supposed to be released from hospital in late February. He could be rearrested under administrative detention the following day, held for another 6 months, and then extended and extended and extended indefinitely. This is a device used by Israel to target human rights activists, NGOs, students, journalists. It's entirely criminal. Why the international community allows it to continue is inexplicable.
Saudi warplanes conduct fresh airstrikes on the Yemeni capital, Sana'a. Yemeni media say the city's September the 21st park has come under to attack twice, that is. Earlier in the day, Saudi forces carried out a total of 30 airstrikes on the provinces of Shabwa and Ma'arib, killing at least 5 people. The kingdom has ramped up its attacks on its southern neighbor in recent weeks. This comes while the Yemeni army has been making significant gains against Saudi-backed forces, clearing vast areas of the militants. The 8th round of talks between Iran and the remaining parties to the 2015 deal is underway in Vienna. The United States says the negotiations have shown modest progress. The U.S. State Department has expressed hope that the parties to the talks can build up on the progress made this week. However, the British Prime Minister is warning that time for salvaging the accord known as the JCPOA is running out. In a phone call with his Israeli counterpart, Boris Johnson said London wants full restoration of the deal, but also needs Iran to engage in good faith. Tehran rejects what it calls the West has fabricated deadlines. Iran says it's up to the other side to speed up progress at the talks. Our Vienna correspondent Homa Lesgi joined us earlier with the latest on the Iran P4+1 talks in the Austrian capital.
Today, the head of Iran's delegation, Mr. Ali Bagheri Kani, held separate meetings with the EU coordinator Enrico Mora, with the three European signatories of the JCPOA, Britain, France, Germany, and also with the Chinese and Russian representatives. And Mikhail Olyanov, the Russian lead delegate, in a tweet said that he had, in his meeting with Mr. Bagheri, discussed the main unresolved issues, and that he'd also met with Enrico Mora on finding possible ways ahead. You just said there in your story the expression modest progress being made. Just before the three-day New Year break, the Russian ambassador, Mikhail Olyanov, said that we're in a stage now in the talks where indeed things are moving forward and progress is being made. And he said that even those delegates who were skeptical previously about these talks getting anywhere now acknowledge that progress is indeed being made, although in his words they're shy to come and express this to the media, because the way that the Europeans, the Americans and the EU coordinator have been talking about the process of talks, they usually refrain from making any overly a remark that could be interpreted as overly optimistic, and they insist on this issue of time and urgency and say that this should happen within weeks rather than months.
And that's it with international news. Stay tuned.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The limelight.
Despite unprecedented levels of hunger and starvation for which U.S. sanctions bear important responsibility, Afghanistan has once again virtually disappeared from the most important single source of world news for most Americans. Dear listeners, in this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Jim Loeb, writer. This article is published under the heading Out of Sight, Out of Mind. Afghanistan Vanishes from U.S. News. Stay tuned for more. Despite unprecedented levels of hunger and starvation for which U.S. sanctions bear important responsibility, Afghanistan has once again virtually disappeared from the most important single source of world news for most Americans. Since September, which marked the end of U.S. efforts to evacuate its citizens and its foreign and Afghan allies, the evening news programs of the three dominant U.S. television networks, including ABC, NBC and CBS, have collectively devoted a grand total of 21 minutes, spread over 10 story segments, to Afghanistan. That marks a stunning plunge in evening news attention from a total of 427 minutes devoted to Afghanistan in the two previous months, about 75% of which were broadcast in August during the Taliban's takeover of the country and the chaotic withdrawal of U.S. and allied personnel. just one 3-minute segment has aired since December 1st. For the American networks this year, what was newsworthy was the fall of Kabul and the pullout of U.S. troops, not the fate of the Afghan people in the aftermath, noted Andrew Tyndall, editor of the authoritative Tyndall Report, which has monitored the three networks' nightly news broadcast each weekday since 1988. Moreover, 15 of those 21 minutes devoted to Afghanistan between October 1st to December 25th had nothing to do with its increasingly desperate humanitarian crisis that threatens nearly 23 million people, or more than half the country's population, with extreme levels of hunger and as many as 1 million children with death due to severe acute malnutrition last winter. Indeed, 4 of the 10 segments were hopeful, feel-good stories focused almost entirely on U.S.-based efforts to help former Afghan allies who are adapting to their new lives in the United States or are still trying to flee the country. A 5th story dealt with an initiative to help Afghan girls continue their education in computer coding remotely, and a 6th was a heartwarming segment about U.S. Army medics who served in Afghanistan in 2011. Only 2 of the 10 news segments addressed the unfolding humanitarian disaster, which was described by the Trump-appointed director of the UN's World Food Program, former South Carolina Governor David Beasley, as hell on earth earlier last month. While the major cable news networks often receive more media attention, the 3-network evening news shows collectively remain the single most important source of international news in the United States. On weekday evenings, an average of about 20 million U.S. viewers tune into national news programs on CBS, ABC, or NBC. That's roughly 4 times the number of people who rely on the major cable stations, Fox News, MSNBC, and CNN, for their news during prime time. About 2 million more people watch the network news via the internet, according to Tyndall. What appears on the national networks often exerts a major influence on the news agenda at other U.S. media organizations. Because network news shows are the most mainstream of the mainstream media, Tyndall told Responsible Statecraft, they can be used as a proxy for the news judgment of mainstream media more generally. In an article published in August, a major reason why Americans were so shocked by the dramatic collapse of the U.S.-supported regime in Kabul was the fact that the 3-weekday evening news programs devoted a combined total of only 5 minutes to coverage of Afghanistan during all of 2020. More recently, tabulated statistics compiled by Tyndall Report show that Afghanistan was entirely absent from the network evening news in January through March of 2021 and claimed a total of only 82 minutes between April and the end of July before hitting 345 minutes in August when the Taliban swept across the country and entered Kabul. In September, by which time the Taliban had taken full control and virtually all Americans had left Afghanistan, the combined network total fell sharply to 82 minutes, only to fall even further to 10 minutes in October. The 2 3-minute segments that addressed the growing humanitarian and hunger crisis aired on NBC Nightly News and ABC Evening News on November 17th and December 15th, respectively. But the morning network news shows generally attract only about a third of the audiences of their evening counterparts. Much more commendable was CBS's coverage of the humanitarian crisis. In a nearly 15-minute segment featured on December 12th edition of 60 Minutes, the nation's most widely watched primetime public affairs program, whose audience normally numbers about 9 million. Negotiating with the Taliban featured interviews not only with representatives of international humanitarian groups, but also with the Taliban health minister. What was missing in the 60-minute segment, as with the two evening news segments about the crisis on the ABC and NBC, however, was any focus on the U.S. role in restricting or blocking funding that could help alleviate its catastrophic impact. As noted by Julie Holler of Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting, the ABC reporter referred only to a mix of sanctions and drought as the crisis' main causes, while NBC's segment concluded its report by simply noting the Taliban's appeal to the United States and other governments to unblock funds frozen since the takeover. Even the 60 Minutes story failed to note Washington's contribution to the crisis, insisting instead that it was the much vaguer international community that was responsible for freezing Afghan assets and shutting down foreign aid and extending sanctions. While that characterization is technically true, the main driver of these actions since August has been the United States regime, which froze $9.5 billion of Afghanistan's own foreign reserves, pressured the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank to delay emergency support, and effectively denied Afghanistan's banks access to the international financial system. Washington's responsibility for the Afghan people's current plight would be highly relevant to U.S. news organizations purportedly dedicated to informing American citizens about what their government is doing. After all, taxpayers have spent an estimated $2.3 trillion and lost more than 2,400 service members during Washington's 20-year war in Afghanistan. And the three networks' weekday evening news broadcast themselves devoted a total of 5,590 minutes to covering that war over that same period. But more than 90% of those 93-plus hours Tyndall told responsible statecraft in August was devoted to the U.S. role in the actual fighting. No more U.S. troops and Marines on the ground, no more coverage on the evening news, the Afghanistan. Despite Washington's enormous impact on the country, both through its military intervention and now through its sanctions, fades quickly into distant memory. Left behind, 23 million Afghans at risk of starvation to add to roughly 176,000 Afghans killed during America's longest war.
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, and this is how Hazrat Fatima Zahra, peace be upon her, enlightens us regarding the mission of her father, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Allah has sent Muhammad as perfection for his commands, a resolution to accomplish his rule, and an implementation of the decrees of his mercy. So he found the nations to vary in their faiths, obsessed by their fires, worshipping their idols, and denying Allah despite their knowledge of Him. Therefore Allah illuminated their darkness with my father, Muhammad, uncovered obscurity from their hearts, and cleared the clouds from their insights. He revealed guidance among the people, so he delivered them from being led astray, led them away from misguidance, guided them to the proper religion, and called them to the straight path.
IRIB English Radio.
Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
For humanity.
سيد عبد الله الموسوي.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته, and welcome to IRIB English Radio, and you are listening to the program For Humanity. We are looking at human rights from the perspective of Amir al-Mu'mineen عليه السلام, and especially the justice of Amir al-Mu'mineen عليه السلام. Amir al-Mu'mineen formulated such firm rules and presented such solid views for the human rights and the rights of human beings and the welfare of the human society that their roots penetrate into the depths of the earth and the branches extend upon to the heavens. All the social sciences which are prevalent at present mostly confirm these views and principles, which in fact derived from the Ahlul Bayt themselves, and especially Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam. Although these modern social sciences may be given many names and may be presented in various forms, the object is one, and one only, that human beings should be protected from oppression, and they should form a society which protects human rights in a better way. And basically this is what we're trying to achieve as human beings, collectively, from all the sciences that we come up with: the safety of man. And Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam, his views, his objectives was exactly that. So when we look at society in which a human's dignity should be respected, and the freedom of world and action should be safe to such an extent that no one should be hurt, is in fact the principles of the justice of Ali alayhi as-salam. The conditions and circumstances of time have a great effect on the creation of social sciences. It is these very conditions and circumstances which presents social sciences in one shape at one time and in another time. So we always constantly changing, we are evolving, our society is evolving, the social sciences themselves are evolving. However, one thing that needs to stay constant, one thing that needs to stay stable, and that is justice, and that is human rights. And this is exactly what Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam stood for. Constant, he did not change with time, he did not evolve with time, his views on justice did not change. Rather, he kept a strict and firm rules into applying and protecting the values and the dignity of a human life. So if you study Amir al-Mu'min's history and we study all the conflicts that happened, you see that he always puts the safety of man before others, and the rights of human beings needs to be preserved. Let us take a short break and then we will continue right after.
Dear listeners, you are listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program For Humanity. Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam enjoys a very high position in the history of human rights. His views were linked with the thinking of Islam. The central point of his views was oppression needs to come to an end, and class discrimination should be eliminated from amongst the people. Whoever has recognized Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam and heard his remarks and read his books and read his sermons and read his letters understand his beliefs and views about human brotherhood and human rights. And he knows that he was a sword drawn on the neck of tyrants. His entire attention was directed towards the enforcement of the rules of equality and justice. At no time you see Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi compromising on that belief. Even when he was elected to be a khalif by the people could not stand the justice of Ali alayhi salam. He left no room for them to move. This is not a government where they can take and give. This is a one-way government, the way of Allah, the way Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala wants it to happen. This is exactly the divine laws of Allah being practiced that have never been practiced by any other human being. And they feared the wrath of Ali alayhi salam, not because Ali alayhi salam was a person who people fear and, you know, he cuts people. Yeah, he Amir al-Mu'mineen, he was the bravest of his time and bravest man in history after the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. But his bravery was put for the servitude of mankind themselves, to preserve their right, to eliminate human classes, to, you know, preserve the dignity of man. And, you know, he does not separate, and he did not differentiate between an Arab and an Arab. To him, that is not justice. So Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi, he stems his views. He takes all these principles from Islam itself, the divine religion of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, as understood by him. Because when you look at Islam and those who followed and practiced Islam, especially those who became leaders of Islam by their own either wit or by their own deception, they treated Islam as a mockery. They dealt with Islam in a way where until today we are being cursed by their actions. They done all the heinous crimes in the names of Islam, in the names trying to apply justice. And they only apply justice when it serves them. When it didn't, they were doing the exact opposite. When someone takes the land of the lady as Zahra alayhi salam, for example, obviously because his mouth is watering over the wealth that this land generates, he will use whatever his means, even if it means lying and making a lie about the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, they will do so. So justice here does not apply, and here oppression applies. So even Amir al-Mu'mineen, even Fatima al-Zahra, even other companions, when they said, no, this is not right, no one cared because it is not in their best interest. Did that happen with Amir al-Mu'mineen himself? Obviously it didn't, because Ali, he only cares about the human beings and their rights, and he cares about justice. Thank you for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
اللهم صل على محمد وآله 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 صل على محمد وآله
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
Chinese astronauts on board the space station have held a unique conference with students, sending them a message that sky is the limit. They hope to inspire students to pursue their dreams and be proactive about their goals. Let's have a listen.
Every one of us went through rigorous selection and arduous training before carrying out space missions. Many people have to wait for several years, dozens of years, and even a whole life. But what deserves praise is that we have never given up, but remained true to our original aspiration, stood the loneliness, and passed the tests.
Ye, who is a first-time space traveler, also encouraged students to be brave in following their dreams. The Chinese astronauts talked about their life, work, and personal experiences. Students from Beijing, Hong Kong, and Macau were given the rare chance to ask their own questions during the Ground Space Conference. China launched Shenzhou 13 into space in October last year. The astronauts are scheduled to stay in orbit for 6 months, which will be the country's longest ever crewed mission.
Shanghai is one of the most famous cities in the world, boasting an impressive number of tourist attractions. Now, the city is hosting that is host to a new event that could draw excited visitors. The exhibition includes more than 100 items from Egypt, including 6 golden mummies. The most prized object on display is a 20-year-old female mummy with a gold mask and 2 jewels for eyes. Organizers have also put up for show original works by great European artists such as Raphael and Pablo Picasso. A zoo in the Netherlands is celebrating the birth of a newborn manatee, a rare event among the endangered species, especially within the confines of captivity. The newcomer was born in a Royal Burger Zoo in a Dutch city of Arnhem. Zookeepers say the birth went smoothly, adding that this is the mother's second calf. The newborn is still too young for keepers to be able to determine its gender, but handlers hope it will be a female. That's because there are only 15 females in European zoos. Manatees are closely related to elephants and are sometimes called sea cows because of their herbivorous diet. These gentle giants are listed as vulnerable to extinction, mainly because of loss of habitat and collisions with boats.
the mobile public library is back in the Afghan capital, Kabul, to bring joy to children with exciting books and games. The library reaches hundreds of children on a daily basis, seeking to expand its coverage in the coming days. Rahmatullah Baghban has more.
As the sun rises in Kabul, the Charmagh's mobile library starts a fresh mission to delight children. The library goes from zone to zone in the capital, Kabul, to spread the joy and love of reading among the Afghan children. It operates in 5 buses and has a children-friendly space. The organizers say they are happy being back for Afghan children.
Definitely, we want to enhance reading among children and boost their creative thinking. We have 5 mobile libraries operating across Kabul. Our services were shut for 3 months due to government change, but now we're happy that once again we can reach Kabul children. The library was sponsored by Afghan traders, but now it's out of funds and needs economic support.
I love my job here as a librarian. It's free for all. Children from different backgrounds come here to read books and play games. What I love most is watching children smiling and having fun with each other. I'm proud I can serve them with the skill I have.
Children are highly excited as they find the library right in front of their houses. Hundreds of children make daily use of initiative as most schools in Kabul lack libraries.
The mobile library used to come to our alley every week, but over the past 3 months, it didn't come and we missed it so much. We are very happy that it is bringing us joy again. Nowadays that our schools are closed, we can make use of its books.
We thank Charmagh for its services. We have learned to read stories, play games and draw pictures. We have kind teachers and have a good time with our friends.
This creative reading campaign resource as the country faced many challenges, affecting children's schooling and taking reading opportunities from them. As schools remain closed for most Afghan children, such services can be a good haven for students and book lovers. The initiative can also encourage children and bring the reading to life. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
People in the northeastern Chinese province are trying to keep alive a winter tradition going back centuries. Each year, local fishermen and women in Jilin use an ancient technique to catch fish from Chagan Lake that is sealed with a thick layer of ice. What these locals do is they drill holes through the ice and put their nets under the holes to catch fish. But to pull out those nets from the lake, they will need help from a bunch of horses.
It was my first time seeing such a scene. 5 horses drawing a turntable to gradually pull the net up to the ice surface. I felt very novel to witness this.
The technique has been listed as a cultural heritage in China. The ceremony attracts a large number of local tourists during the fishing season, which lasts until the end of February. Albino animals are rare and very vulnerable, so when you find one, you need to make sure they get all the care they need to survive. And now, Colombian vets are doing all they can to help the very first case of an albino baby, Jaguarundi, that's been rescued there. Fire department volunteers rescued this female cub in the urban areas of the Abora Valley region. The vets are now giving it primary medical attention. The baby Jaguarundi will then be transferred to a conservation park in the city of Medellin for more protection. A local expert explains why they cannot put back the animal into the wild.
At this point, this animal cannot be released to the wild due to its albino condition. It is predisposed to certain health disorders, certain disadvantages when performing in the wild. Therefore, the only alternative for it is to end his life in a park such as this.
Albino animals face many difficulties in the wild and struggle with basic survival skills. They do not have good eyesight, and due to their lack of pigmentation, they cannot camouflage. Therefore, just like endangered species, human monitoring would increase their chances of survival.
Swimming in sub-zero temperatures can be unimaginable for most people, but not for a group of athletes who've tested their skills and strength in Prague's Vltava River. 360 people from 8 countries gathered in the Czech capital to participate in an annual winter swimming event. The air temperature was minus 6 degrees Celsius, with water temperatures dipping to as low as 3 degrees. The event honors Alfred Nikodem, a Czech swimmer who braved the frigid waters in Prague for the first time in 1923, starting a tradition that has been kept alive ever since.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Now the world's most powerful observatory is finally on its million-kilometer journey after several technical delays. The NASA telescope named James Webb blasted off into orbit on Saturday, heading to an outpost that's 1.5 million kilometers away from Earth. The observatory was in the making for some 3 decades and cost about $10 billion. It left Earth enclosed in a rocket and from a launch pad in South America. The journey will last a month. The telescope is the size of a tennis court. And if everything goes according to plan, it will enter service in June. Astronomers are hoping they can learn more about the origins of the universe once it starts beaming back new clues. The school in Spain is offering students an opportunity to join a special orchestra. The project, dubbed The Music of Recycling, brings unwanted junk back to life by transforming them into musical instruments. And here is how they sound. The project offers the instruments to the orchestra in one of Madrid's most disadvantaged neighborhoods. The students say the orchestra keeps them away from mischief and out of serious trouble while giving them an artistic outlet. Several dozens of children are taking music classes from members of the orchestra as part of the project. The ensemble has put on several concerts across Spain, but because of the pandemic, they had to pause their performances. The project is run by Spanish environmental group and is inspired by similar orchestra in Paraguay. To most people, an eggshell is something that gets tossed in the garbage, but to one Chinese artist, the delicate eggshell is the chosen canvas to express art and create mini masterpieces. Zhu is a talented craftsman who has created a series of unique egg sculptures with the theme of Beijing's Winter Olympic and Paralympic Games. Icons of ice and snow sports, as well as etchings of the 2022 Olympic mascots, are showcased in this series. The thin and delicate texture of the shells adds to the difficulty of the craft, which creates a sense of fragile beauty. Zhu says his fascination with eggshell art started when he was very young.
The Christmas season is when people around the world left out a dose of joy in the form of Santas. But it's different in central Thailand on this Christmas Eve. Thai children were ecstatic to see Santa Claus's distributing presents, but this time in the shape of elephants. Dressed in Santa costumes, 5 elephants carried dolls, face masks, and sanitizers for students. They were surrounded by many human Santa Clauses as well. But the students cheered with joy while reaching out for presents from the jumbos. Event managers say their goal was to encourage students to stay vigilant during the pandemic. Plus, they wanted to give the children some fun to look forward after months of virtual classes. The event is a yearly highlight for a school that caters to students from kindergarten to secondary level.
Scientists have made a stunning discovery inside a fossilized dinosaur egg, an embryo that's been preserved in a perfect shape. The embryo was found inside a 66-million-year-old fossil in a museum in the Chinese city of Guangzhou. Paleontologists say it's the best dinosaur embryo ever found. They're hoping it would help a lot in finding the links between modern birds and dinosaurs. The fossil belongs to a toothless Oviraptorosaur, a group of feathered dinosaurs that used to live in what's now Asia and North America. The embryo is nicknamed Baby Yinliang after the Chinese museum that houses the fossil.
Exchanging gifts is an inseparable and also the most joyful part of Christmas traditions. How about sharing the joy with animals? Now, a zoo in the Colombian city of Cali is doing so by giving presents to its animals. The presents are actually the animals' favorite foods served in a different way. Animals spend time unpacking the gifts decorated in Christmas theme and then access the food they like the most. Feeding in this way arouses the animals' curiosity and fills them with excitement. Zookeepers say they want to show that animals always receive care at their zoo.
It is a very cool way to generate empathy for visitors. Although animals do not know that it's Christmas or that it's a special date, it is important to generate that message in visitors that we make care of our animals and that for us it is important to share with them this Christmas season.
The zookeepers say they make use of enrichment strategies for their initiative. They actually stimulate the behaviors of a range of animals, even the species they keep in an aquarium.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
A year and a half after a Government Accountability Office report revealed that the U.S. Department of Energy has no coherent plan in place to manage nuclear waste from weapons manufacturing piling up at more than 150 sites across the U.S., the DOE has made little progress in developing a safe and a strategic plan to handle the waste. Dear listeners, what you heard was part of an article written by Charles Pico Ryder. This article is published under the heading, "The U.S. Still Doesn't Know How and Where It Will Store Its Growing Nuclear Waste." Stay tuned for more.